This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. I'm Henrik de Gior. Today I'm speaking with Mitch Brodsky. Mitch, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Good. Mitch, how are you involved with digital asset management?
I work for the New York Philharmonic. My official title here is Digital Archives Manager. I was hired to manage a three-year project with support from the Leon Levy Foundation to digitize 1.3 million pages of historical material here in the archives between the years 1943 to 1970. My role has largely been project manager for that project. However, I've branched out into other responsibilities such as web archiving, electronic records management, and other sorts of digital asset management issues here within the organization.
How does the Philharmonic use digital asset management?
As a result of our digitization project, we have a website that was launched in February 2011. You can find it at archives.nyphil.org. That is a site where you can view the 1.3 million pages that we've digitized, and that is under an alfresco repository. Mm-hmm. So that's one element of what we do, is to manage that large repository and continue to grow it into the future. We have printed music, which includes scores and orchestral parts used and marked by Leonard Bernstein, Andrei Kostolanets, and other conductors, and of course the parts are marked by the orchestral musicians. Mm-hmm. We also have every printed program that you can flip through online. We are beginning to go back and complete the digitization of 1842 through yesterday's program, but we do have online right now everything from 1943 to 1970. In addition, we have all of the photographs from that time period, glass lanyard slides that were used in the first Young People's Concerts, mm-hmm. and business records, which is actually the bulk of the material. What we call business records are correspondence, contracts, financial documents, anything related to the daily running of the Philharmonic. So this is really what, as records managers, what we accession every day from the administration of the organization. We have digitized everything in TIFF and JPEG. All the images that you're seeing online are JPEGs that are being represented in our Internet Archive book reader, which I believe now is hosted on the Open Library. So we adapted that book reader to pull the JPEGs associated with the asset you're looking for, mm-hmm. into it, so you can flip through it as though, mm-hmm. it's on the reading room table in front of you. That said, since we have digitized everything from 1943 to 1970, we are continuing to go back and digitize everything from 1842 now to 1943. So we will be eventually completing the digitization of all of the historical assets owned by the Philharmonic. Nice. In addition to that, we're beginning the process of accessioning born digital material into the archives. So the idea is that at one point in time, we will have a single repository that contains all of the intellectual assets of the organization from 1842 through today. We'll be able to facilitate the discovery of items that follow certain themes throughout the entire history of the institution. And we do utilize assets relating to certain issues through time. So this will be one day, a discovery tool to be able to pull things out that relate to overall topics that we might be dealing with today, but we had also dealt with in the 70s or the 40s or the 20s and so on.
What are the biggest challenges and successes you've seen with digital asset management?
The biggest challenge is definitely workflow. Now, our case in digital asset management might be a little bit different from what first would appear to someone's mind, when hearing that term. To me, digital asset management largely means born digital material that is accessioned into a repository and managed, and then later leveraged however the organization sees fit. What I've had most experience with here is digitizing analog material into digital assets. And so that bears an enormous amount of challenge from the workflow, because we have to prepare items for digitization, then it has to be photographed by our in-house photographers, then every page has to be proofed, which means compared with the original item. And we have this very complex workflow, both in terms of physical logistics, but also software, where, you know, in between those steps, I have to ingest all these assets into the system at an enormous rate, create derivative files, and then put approved items into a queue for release, and then finally release when we decide to do our point releases. My job as the project manager is to make sure that all the people involved here have work to do every day, and that we're not backed up or too far ahead in one part of the process or another. And that's the biggest challenge from where I sit. The biggest success, well, it's amazing when you work so hard on a project like this, and the site goes online and it's living and breathing. And the most amazing thing to me are the comments that come in from people that, you know, how much they're using this now in their research. You know, only a year, I guess a year, year and a half into the project, we are working with some Columbia sociologists to look at subscription seating through the history of our ticket sales. They've been crunching some of our data and transcribing our subscriber seat books. To determine whether people, you know, where people sat had any association to their status in New York society. And so it's just a really interesting project that we would never have dreamed would have come out of this, especially so soon after the initial release of the digital archives. That's just one example of many very serious researchers write us and tell us that they want to use our data for some extraordinary project that will add to the information that's out there. And so I'm just very proud of that. So I suppose that that's the greatest success that I see, is just that this thing is out there and people are utilizing it and they're responding to it. And every time we've done a release, we've seen our numbers almost double in terms of our analytics.
That's great.
And this has been very telling for us, that people really are interested in this. We were in a really good position with our metadata when we started the project. Our metadata is housed in two different databases, depending on the type of material. But these databases have been curated and utilized since the 80s. And so our metadata is in very good shape. And so what we do is we have a metadata on the asset level, what we call the asset level. So for business folders, we have metadata on the folder level. For music scores, we have it on the score level. So each bound volume is described with metadata. We don't do page level description because we simply would never have gotten it done.
Fair.
When we started out with the project, we already had, you know, our metadata was pretty clean. And so as part of the proofing process, as we were proofing images, the people who were doing that were also checking to make sure that the metadata was standardized, and cleaning up whatever needed to be cleaned up. So our printed music and our performance history or program metadata is in an in-house, home-built, multi-value database system. And our business records and image metadata is in Magic DB TexWorks. And we've had good success with those. So the way the process works is when we photograph the analog material and I ingest those JPEGs into our Alfresco repository. I also do an export of the metadata from our legacy systems and import those as well. And so everything is tied by ID. And if we do have to revise metadata, we do it in our in-house databases and then re-import again. One day we will be doing direct metadata entry in Alfresco, in the Alfresco interface, but we just haven't started that yet. It's important to note that these are not archival databases. The databases that we use that feed into our digital archives are used really by the entire organization for different purposes. And for those people who are listening to this as archivists, we don't distinguish between what is archival and what is current. And I think that goes to the same point of the purpose of this project, to make one large repository, one continuum of information, of history of the Philharmonic. The information that was being created by the institution in 1842 is just as relevant and just as important as the documents that are being created right now by our executive director or managers of various sorts.
What advice would you like to share with dam professionals and people aspiring to become dam professionals?
I would say learn as much as you can about different systems, different types of repositories, and different programming languages. Mm-hmm. I'm not a quote-unquote developer. That's not my training background. I have a degree in library science, and I also have a music degree. Mm-hmm. But I was also a geek, and I loved tinkering with computers for my whole life. In the early 90s, when HTML started to become a thing and the web started to happen, I had a big book of, you know, the HTML Bible, and I was just, I went front to back and I learned it, and I had no idea then that it would, that would form the foundation for my career in the future. And now, you know, it doesn't stop. I go home and I do online JavaScript tutorials, and I do online jQuery tutorials, and whatever else, because it just never stops, the amount that you can learn. Mm-hmm. And the benefit of being a professional, especially a technology-oriented professional in today's world, is that there's so much open source software, and there's so much community around learning these things. There are plenty of free or very inexpensive ways, if you're willing to put the time in, to keep up with what's going on out there. I love Code Academy. It's not huge yet, but the examples and the tutorials they have on there have really helped refresh some things for me, and in other cases, learn from scratch. So I would definitely recommend it. I try to take my own advice in that case and do it myself. And you know, it's so easy. For instance, you know, Alfresco is a great example. You know, you can download for free a community version of Alfresco and learn how it works and what are the pros and cons of it. And you can do that with any number of repository systems. Knowing about what's out there is really important, because when an option comes up in your job, you have to make a decision between one system or technique or another system or technique. To know all the options that are out there and why one would choose one over the other is just really important.
Yep, very true. Well, that sounds like a great example of how you made a personal commitment to invest in yourself in learning those skills.
Absolutely. Well, there's no reason not to.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Mitch.
You're welcome.
For more on this and other digital asset management topics, log on to anotherdamblog.com. Another Damn Podcast is available on Audioboo and iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to email me at anotherdamblog@gmail.com. Thanks again.